Imagine taking a paperback book cover from like 1984 and blowing it up to the size of a giant flat screen TV in a Southern California studio,
Oh, wow.
and then using that to basically create a literal doorway to a cruelty-free universe. It sounds, I mean, almost absurd on the surface.
It really does. But you know, art has this really strange power to take the mundane, scale it up, and just completely shatter our perception of reality.
Exactly. So, welcome to today's deep dive. If you've ever looked at a painting and felt like it was literally pulling you into its world, you're going to love this one.
Absolutely.
Today, we are digging into a stack of artist statements, technical notes, and some source materials regarding a really striking monumental artwork. It's titled Parthasarathi, and it's by the contemporary artist Jarrow Duke.
And our mission today is to unpack not just the vibrant visual techniques he uses, but the profound spiritual philosophy embedded in this canvas.
Right. We want to see how a physical object like, literally just a piece of stretched fabric with pigment on it, can act as a threshold between our everyday material world and a deeply intentional philosophy of living.
Because to understand how a painting functions as a threshold, we really have to start with its physical foundation. I mean, art doesn't just appear out of the ether, right? It's constructed.
It is. So let's start right there with the construction. Looking at the materials we have, what are the actual physical specs of this piece?
Well, based on the technical sheet, the Ficha Technica provided by the artist, this is a substantial piece. We are talking 48 by 36 inches.
That's pretty massive.
Yeah, quite large. The medium is Liquitex acrylics on canvas, but the detail that really anchors this entire project is the location of its creation.
Okay, where was it made?
The notes specifically tie this piece to Whittier, California, completed around October of 2020.
Whittier. That's in Los Angeles County, right?
Yeah,
It
exactly.
just seems like a very specific geographical anchor for a piece that's so focused on the spiritual,
Yeah. Well, the artist emphasizes Whittier because it is the actual location of his studio. It's where he works on his paintings.
Oh, I see.
It's the physical workspace where he actively paints, where he's mixing those Liquitex acrylics and bringing these massive visions to life. It's so important to visualize that concrete space for you as the listener.
Right, just an artist standing in a studio in Southern California in the fall of 2020.
Exactly. Dealing with the physical realities of canvas and paint. To create something that attempts to, well, transcend that very physicality.
I love that. And having that image of the artist at work in Whittier, it makes the actual method he used even more fascinating. Because when you read into how he constructed the image on that 48 by 36 inch canvas, it's not your traditional blank slate scenario.
No, not at all. So the scene depicted in Parthasarathi features these magnificent, really dynamic white horses pulling a chariot.
Yeah, they're gorgeous.
But this composition wasn't conjured from Duke's own imagination from scratch. It is actually a deliberate reinterpretation of a pre-existing image.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Specifically, a 1984 painting by an artist named Tariksit Dasa.
And that 1984 painting has a very specific cultural footprint, doesn't it?
It does.
I mean, it was used as the cover image for a highly circulated edition of the Bhagavad Gita, published by ISK Con.
Right. And for those unfamiliar with the acronym, ISK Con stands for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Most people just know them colloquially as the Hare Krishna movement.
Got it.
So Duke is taking a highly recognizable piece of religious illustration and bringing it into his own artwork using an image transfer technique in acrylic.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second,
Yeah.
because if he's taking a book cover from 1984 and he's using an image transfer technique to bring someone else's composition onto his 2020 canvas, how is this original art?
That's a great question.
I mean, I'm trying to wrap my head around how this becomes a unique piece and not just a giant, meticulously executed photocopy.
Well, in contemporary art, the act of appropriation, taking a pre-existing image and transplanting it into a new medium or scale, is a creative act in itself
Oh.
because it fundamentally alters the image's meaning. First, consider the sheer mechanics of an acrylic image transfer on this scale. It is intensely laborious.
I can imagine.
Usually, it involves coating a printed image with a thick acrylic gel medium, pressing it face down onto the canvas, letting it cure, and
And then what?
then painstakingly rubbing away the paper backing with water.
Oh, wow. So the paper is completely destroyed,
Yeah.
but the actual ink of the original image gets trapped in the dried acrylic skin on the canvas.
You are literally peeling away the original context. The ink is now suspended in the acrylic, fused to the canvas.
That is wild.
And when an artist scales this up to 48 by 36 inches, often combining transfer techniques with meticulous overpainting and color enhancement, the labor itself becomes a form of reverence.
So he's really making it his own through the process.
Exactly. Duke views his painting not as a mere illustration of the older work, but as a monumental piece in its own right. By taking an image that previously functioned as a book cover-like, an illustration meant to accompany text, and transferring and painting it onto a massive canvas in his Whittier studio, he strips away its original utilitarian function.
He's taking an image meant to explain a book, and he's turning it into a standalone destination.
That's a perfect way to put it. He creates what he describes as a transit territory.
A transit territory. I like that.
It becomes a zone that exists between the strictly pictorial, the physical paint on the canvas, and the spiritual realm it depicts. He is asking you, the viewer, to stop reading it as a visual aid for a text and to start engaging with it as a pure, immersive, philosophical threshold.
But to really understand how he pulls off that transformation from a book cover to a monumental transit territory, we have to look at the visual mechanics of the canvas itself.
We do.
Because from the artist's own descriptions, the visual experience of this piece is incredibly intense. It's almost an assault on the senses.
Yeah, the term the artist's notes use is visual abundance.
Visual abundance.
The painting features these brilliant, stark white horses that are sharply contrasted against incredibly deep, intense golds, vibrant reds, and rich, saturated blues.
So it's not a subtle pastel landscape.
Definitely not.
It is loud. It reminds me of the physical jolt you get when you walk out of a pitch-black movie theater straight into intense midday sunlight.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
It forces a physiological adjustment. You know, you have to squint. You have to physically orient yourself to this new, overwhelming environment. It's like turning the volume up to 11 on a stereo system.
Yeah.
The artist is intentionally risking visual excess here.
And that visual excess is a calculated mechanism. The intensity of the colors responds directly to the profound symbolic richness of the tradition it's depicting.
Sure.
But it's also about how those colors manipulate space. The stark, brilliant whites of the horses in the foreground juxtaposed against those deep, saturated blues in the background create a violent optical contrast.
Because warm colors and bright whites naturally advance toward the human eye, right? While cool, dark blues recede. So the colors are physically pushing the front of the image out at you.
And that push is amplified by how Duke handles the sky. The treatment of the sky is a critical artistic choice.
What does he do with it?
He paints it to be ample, vibrant, and almost infinite. It's not just a backdrop. It's designed to suggest a dimension that transcends the terrestrial.
Oh, wow.
It creates an immense void behind the figures, which only makes the foreground elements seem closer and more immediate.
And the sources mention the painting has a dynamic vocation, or a vocation dynamica.
Yes.
The perspective lines of the chariot aren't pulling your eye inward toward a distant vanishing point. They're actually thrusting outward.
The forward advance of the chariot is designed to literally break the pictorial space.
Break the space.
Because of the 48 by 36 inch scale, that aggressive color contrast pushing the whites forward and that infinite receding sky, the chariot feels like it is violating the boundary of the canvas.
It's coming right at you.
The momentum bridges the gap between the painting and the room you're standing in, forcing you, the viewer, to step into the scene. You really cannot remain a passive observer.
Okay, so we have this massive canvas in a Whittier studio, constructed through a laborious transfer process, utilizing an optical assault of color and perspective to make a chariot look like it's crashing into our reality.
Right.
Why go to such extreme lengths to create this forward momentum? What is this chariot actually driving toward?
Well, to understand the mechanism of that forward momentum, we have to look at the cast of characters inside the chariot.
Okay, who's in there?
We have two main figures, Krishna and Arjuna.
Right.
Now, while this originates from an epic historical narrative in the Bhagavad Gita, Duke's notes clarify that his interest lies entirely in the metaphor.
The metaphor.
This scene is a metaphor for the journey of the soul.
And the title of the painting, Parthasarathi, actually translates to the charioteer, doesn't it?
It does. In this tradition, the charioteer represents consciousness, pure divine consciousness acting as a guide through the battlefield of material existence.
The philosophical resonance here is fascinating. I mean, the artist's notes use this Spanish phrase, un ropaje temporal, which translates to temporary clothing.
Yes, temporary clothing.
It reframes the physical body completely.
Yeah.
It asks us to view the human body not as the core of our identity, but as a transient vessel, literally a temporary garment, navigating the material world while the permanent consciousness resides within.
And once you grasp that concept, the violent forward momentum of the painting makes perfect sense.
How so?
The painting has to be dynamic. It has to feature that aggressive advance and that expansive sky because the composition is visually sustaining the idea of constant transit.
Right, because we're just passing through.
Exactly. If the body is just temporary clothing, then existence itself is movement. The physical displacement of the horses breaking the pictorial space mirrors the spiritual displacement of the soul moving through material reality.
Man, the form and the function are completely locked together.
They really are.
But, you know, looking at the two figures in the chariot brings up a really interesting power dynamic to me.
Ah.
Yeah, Arjuna, the passenger in the back, represents the human soul. Krishna, who is the ultimate divine figure in this theology, is the one sitting up front driving the chariot.
Right.
Usually the most powerful person is one sitting in the back being chauffeured around. Isn't driving a chariot a pretty humble job for a deity?
Right.
What does this say about their relationship?
That specific dynamic is the absolute essence of the Vaishnava tradition that this painting depicts.
Okay, tell me more.
Within this theology, the divine is not a distant, untouchable dictator demanding submission from afar. God is intimately tied to the unconditional love of the devotee.
Oh, wow.
The divine is so deeply connected to the human soul that he is willing to take on the absolute humblest of societal roles, the charioteer, the driver, the servant.
That is a massive subversion of how we typically construct hierarchies of power. I mean, the ultimate power in the universe takes the role of a chauffeur out of love.
And the metaphor reaches its conclusion with Arjuna's reaction. Arjuna, representing the human soul, completely surrenders to this divine guide.
He just lets go.
Yeah. By relinquishing control and trusting this pure consciousness to steer the chariot, Arjuna achieves the ultimate success.
Which is?
In this tradition, the highest prize is not wealth or dominion, but simply attaining the love of God. The painting captures that intimate cosmic relationship playing out at high speed.
When you understand that power dynamic, the painting really shifts from an action scene to an incredibly intimate portrait of surrender.
It does change everything.
It makes you realize that Parthasarathi isn't just an isolated thought experiment. And the sources note that this painting is actually the conceptual axis for a much broader artistic project.
Yes, it inaugurates a 5-part series that Duke titled Characters, Tourist Monuments, and Historical Sites.
That's an interesting title.
This specific 5-painting series is dedicated entirely to central figures of the Hare Krishna movement.
And the series covers a pretty wide chronological and spiritual range. It includes representations of the boy Krishna moving through to Sri Panchatattva.
Right. And Sri Panchatattva refers to a specific 5-fold manifestation of the divine in the 15th century within this tradition, representing different aspects of divine grace and energy.
And the series also prominently features A.C. Bhagavadanta Swami Prabhupada.
Yes, he is the Acharya, or the leading foundational instructor, who formally established ISK Khan and brought this specific lineage of theology to a global audience in the 20th century.
So Duke is moving from these ancient mythological metaphors of chariots and battlefields to the actual historical figures who founded modern global movements.
Exactly.
But, you know, painting 5 large-scale portraits of figures from one specific religious movement, it sounds like a traditional act of religious devotion.
You'd think so, but Duke makes a crucial distinction in his notes regarding this. He explicitly states that these paintings are not conceived as objects of dogmatic devotion.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He doesn't want the viewer to interact with these canvases as idols to be blindly worshipped or as rigid, unshakable religious dogma.
If they aren't meant for religious devotion, what is their function?
He views these paintings as doorways to a philosophy of life that extends beyond the boundaries of formal religion.
Okay.
He is utilizing the iconography of these figures to highlight an ethic of good living.
An ethic of good living. And the sources outline exactly what that entails. It's a philosophy centered on cultivating profound peace, active joy, and a deep-seated respect for nature.
Yes, very much so.
It emphasizes a respect for animals, for plants, and notably a respect for all forms of existence, including matter itself.
And that respect for matter creates a beautiful feedback loop with his own artistic process.
Oh, how so?
Well, think about his studio in Whittier. The physical labor of the image transfer, the meticulous layering of the Liquitex acrylics.
Right, the manual labor.
He is taking the physical matter of the world fabric, pigment, water, gel mediums, and treating it with profound respect and labor to create a window into the spiritual. The medium itself embodies the philosophy.
That's brilliant. The motivation behind this series comes from Duke, observing a global community, the people actively following this consciousness, and finding a fundamental merit in how they operate in the real world.
Exactly. He saw a community attempting to live coherently with this message of nonviolence.
They are advocating for and actively living a cruelty-free life. The core idea is that spiritual liberation isn't some distant reward you wait for after you die. It's a state of being that you integrate into your daily living right now, specifically in how you treat the world and the living creatures around you.
And Duke's artistic goal isn't to preach a sermon. His goal is to rescue that concrete, lived experience, that daily, cruelty-free, joyful existence, and translate it into a visual language.
He's trying to show what that philosophy actually looks like when it manifests physically.
And we can really trace the entire arc of that manifestation through our discussion today.
Yeah, we can.
I mean, we began with the concrete realities of an artist's studio in Whittier, California, examining the physical specs of a 48 by 36 inch canvas.
And the laborious mechanics of transferring a 1984 book cover into a new monumental context.
Exactly. We explored how the visual abundance of the piece, the aggressive contrast of the stark whites against the receding blues, physically breaks the pictorial space,
forcing the chariot's forward momentum out of the frame and pulling the viewer into an infinite spiritual sky.
Then we decoded the metaphor of the chariot itself, uncovering the Vaishnava philosophy that views the physical body as a transient vessel, un rupasha temporal, guided by a divine consciousness that subverts traditional power dynamics through unconditional love.
And we saw how this single threshold anchors a wider series dedicated to an ethic of good living, celebrating a community focused on peace, joy, and a cruelty-free respect for all existence.
As we conclude this analysis, I think it is vital to highlight the artist's ultimate intention for you, the viewer.
Right. Duke explicitly states in his notes that this artwork is not meant to close an interpretation. It is not a puzzle designed to be solved and then just put away.
He conceives it as an open invitation. It's a provocation to explore, to debate, and to question our own assumptions.
Yeah.
He wants the painting to function as a space where we can think about paths of freedom and remember that our existence is not entirely exhausted by the purely material world we see in front of us.
He provides the threshold, the visual intensity to pull you across it, and the philosophical framework of a world sustained by consciousness and harmonious coexistence.
But he leaves the ultimate application of that experience entirely up to the individual observing the canvas.
He does.
Which leaves us with a lingering question about our own reality. We've established that Parthasarathi breaks the pictorial space to pull you into a universe governed by pure consciousness and a cruelty-free respect for all living things.
Yeah. The experience of the painting is designed to be overwhelming. But what happens to your perspective of the material world once you mentally step out of that chariot and back into your daily routine?
That's the real question.
When you look in the mirror, do you view your own physical form differently, recognizing it as just temporary clothing for something far more permanent? And perhaps most importantly, having experienced that threshold, do you walk through the world with a little less cruelty and a little more consciousness?
It's definitely something to think about.
The doorway is open. Where you go next is up to you.